Welcome to Noracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host.
And I'm here too. We have a packed slate today.
Over the weekend, a 12 terabyte archive of legacy Steam data quietly appeared online. It covers a full decade of early PC gaming history.
We are also looking at the OpenShot video editor. They just released version 4.0, which brings local machine learning models and professional color scopes to an open source platform.
Plus, we track a functional public phone booth in the middle of Burning Man and review a couple of new workflow patterns for AI subagents. Over the weekend of August 29th, an enormous archive of legacy Steam data surfaced online. People are calling it the Steam 2 Tera leak.
We're talking 12 to 13 terabytes of files. The data spans from 2003 all the way to 2013.
It is a goldmine of lost development history. The archive includes unreleased prototypes, early playtest builds, and cut content for both Valve games and third-party titles.
You can find early iterations of Portal 2, Left 4 Dead, and Counter-Strike Global Offensive in there. There are even assets tied to Half-Life 2 Episode 3.
Which is exactly the kind of thing that sends data miners into a frenzy. But what stands out to me is how this data got out. This was not a sophisticated cyber attack.
Right. Prominent analysts like Gabe Follower confirmed this did not stem from a hack or a security breach. It came from an old, unprotected, publicly accessible API endpoint.
It was just sitting on Valve's legacy infrastructure. Anyone who found the endpoint could pull the files.
The timeline of the data is the key to why this happened. It cuts off abruptly in 2013. That is the year Valve retired its proprietary Steam 2 storage system.
That was the system that relied on GCF and NCF files. They transitioned the whole platform over to the SteamPipe content distribution framework.
SteamPipe was a necessary upgrade. The old GCF format was notoriously clunky for developers trying to push small updates. But when they migrated, someone clearly forgot to shut down the old API.
It is a stark example of how difficult corporate data hygiene is at scale. You stand up a new system, but you leave the old one running for backward compatibility or just out of oversight. 10 years later, someone stumbles on it.
And 13 terabytes of game assets from the 2000s is a staggering volume of data. Games were only a few gigabytes back then. That implies they captured almost everything on the server.
It raises immediate legal and ethical questions. Community members are actively downloading this archive, analyzing it, and trying to run unreleased commercial software builds.
Valve has historically been more tolerant of community data mining than other publishers, but this is proprietary code. They haven't issued a massive wave of takedowns yet, but a leak of this scale might force a response.
If a company with Valve's engineering talent can leave a petabyte-scale backdoor open for a decade, you have to wonder how many other legacy endpoints are quietly active across the industry.
It is the digital equivalent of finding a forgotten warehouse full of prototypes, except the door was left wide open on a public street.
I expect we will see playable builds of that early Portal 2 content circulating within the week. The modding community moves fast when they get their hands on raw assets like this.
Let's shift over to the creator side. OpenShot 4.0 was released on August 30th.
This is a major structural update for the project. OpenShot has been around for 18 years as an approachable, free, cross-platform video editor. But 4.0 introduces tools you typically only see in commercial software.
They built a dedicated color view. It includes color wheels, editable RGB curves, and full support for .cube LUTs. They also added professional video scopes, like Luma waveforms and vector scopes.
Adding vector scopes to a free editor is a significant step. It gives indie creators a way to learn actual color grading without paying for a subscription or fighting the learning curve of DaVinci Resolve. They also introduced a new recording view. You can capture your screen, webcam, microphone, and system audio directly into a project, and it drops them in as separate tracks.
Which streamlines the workflow for podcasting and streaming. But the feature that caught my attention is the local machine learning integration. Right. OpenShot 4.0 includes offline models for semantic subject isolation and object masking.
There are no cloud dependencies and no API keys required. It all runs locally on your machine.
The performance benchmark will be interesting. Real-time object tracking is computationally expensive. Running those open-source models on a modest laptop without a dedicated GPU could be rough.
It might be slow on older hardware, but bundling AI masking directly into an open-source editor shows where the baseline is moving. Privacy-preserving, local AI features are becoming standard.
Internally, they made some long-awaited architectural changes. Both libOpenShot and libOpenShot Audio finally reached version 1.0.
They also migrated the entire UI framework to Qt 6. That improves Wayland and fractional scaling support for Linux users, which has been a persistent pain point for media applications on that operating system.
Seeing an 18-year-old project adapt this aggressively is impressive. Upgrading to Qt 6 is a heavy lift on its own. Adding local AI models and pro color scopes on top of that is a strong statement from the maintainers.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick.
Sounds good.
First up, the Playa phone. This is a functional public phone booth set up at Burning Man, located at 330 and C near the Temple of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Anyone can call the booth from the outside world at area code 775-557-4848. Attendees can also make free outbound calls, limited to 5 minutes.
During the previous Burning Man week, they logged 1,460 successful outbound calls across 23 countries and 676 inbound calls.
Maintaining a live landline connection in that harsh desert environment is a solid networking achievement, especially in a community known for digital detoxing.
Over on the typography side of Hacker News, an article titled, "I Just Chose Words Carefully," gained traction. It was published on the software craft blog Eris Luna.
The author wrote a block of monospace text that was fully justified, but they didn't use any software layout tools. They achieved it purely through manual word choice.
They substituted longer or shorter synonyms on the fly so that every single line ended exactly at the same margin.
It is an intense self-imposed constraint. Spending that much time manually formatting text via vocabulary choices is a fascinating counterpoint to automated text generation.
In AI development, a new issue on the Claude Code Repository proposes a built-in bounded auto-retry with schema degradation for structured output subagents.
The author points out that the dominant cause of subagent failure is the output shape, not the task itself. Things like a schema that is too strict or the model running out of room mid-JSON and failing validation.
Right now, developers have to notice the failure and hand-edit the schema to be leaner. They want the harness to automate that recovery mechanically.
Also on Cloud Code, there is a proposal for a first-class adversarial verify review mode for multi-agent workflows. This splits a codebase audit into two roles. A mapper agent extracts claims from the code and documentation, and a separate verifier agent actively tries to refute those claims by opening the actual files. Claims that survive the adversarial check are confirmed. It formalizes a red teaming pattern right into the multi-agent workflow to reduce hallucinated invariants.
And that is going to do it for today's briefing.
Thanks for listening. We will be back tomorrow with more updates.
Catch you then.